You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up and welcome back to the Kind of Funny Screencast. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Great morning, everybody.
The Big Daddy, Greg Miller.
Nick, Kevin, when are you going to get some Govee lights? Look at how good we look over here with all our lights, me, Tim, and Andy. Govee or go home. Come on now.
Well, Kevin's got some Hue lights ordered, I know, for his room. But for me, I don't know, Kev. What should I do back here?
I mean, the problem is we have too much natural light coming into our space. I
know. Wait, hold on.
We don't live in caves like these boys. You know what I mean?
It's true. Were the options there 15 lights or 16 lights?
Yeah, that's what I don't know how LED lights work. Yeah.
I love you so much, producer / seducer Nick Scarpino.
Hello, Tim. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. And rounding out the crew, we have the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
Manatee, as close to as woman as you can get.
That is not how you intro that, Kevin. Like, if you're going to drop a joke that we referred to before the show starts, you got to explain it just a little bit more.
Full disclosure, we had a long conversation about Christopher Columbus fucking manatees before this, all right? And that's where that is coming from.
And if you read his journal, you'll get that joke.
I would have bet dollars for donuts.
Only Kevin has read Christopher Columbus's journal, all right?
Yeah, that's the takeaway.
I would have bet money, Andy, that Greg slacked Kevin a dare to say that when the show started.
Can we restart this?
You don't dare Kevin Coelho. Don't dare when he's coming off of giving us the history lesson that was Christopher Columbus having sex with manatees. And you can Google it, ladies and gentlemen.
They were mermaids. Like we haven't made that clear yet. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners.
You don't need to make that clear. You know what I mean?
Nick, Andy, did you know this before 5 minutes ago?
No. There's a lot of things I don't know before doing podcasts with you guys that I didn't need to know, but we know now, and that's how it goes.
This all started from me saying you guys need to watch Nirvana, the band, the show, because other people that we respect, other people's opinions we respect, like Matt Rohrbeck and Cameron Ken, and then Kevin said that they were wrong, and then I said, you're wrong about what you think, and he said, well, you know what? Christopher Columbus used to fuck manatees, or something along those lines.
I mean, my response was excellent. I'm not going to repeat it. It was excellent and well thought out, which is shocking for me at a 10 a.m.
It's rare that I'm this behind Kevin, but Kevin nailed it. And while we're just getting all this out on the table, in college, right, I remember in an English class. There was some famous author. I forget who. It doesn't fucking matter. Well, it does matter for what this is. But in class, the teacher shared, like, his, like, love letters to his, wife or whoever, mistress maybe. And they were fucking graphic. And I'll tell you, I came back and I read those to kids at the Antler House because there's things I won't even say. There's words in there, Andy, I won't even say on this thing. You know, you don't say them on TV words. And I would like to read those again. So if you know what I'm talking about, let me know what author I'm thinking of, right? Because I can remember distinctly what I should put into Googling quotes to get what. But I assure you, I'm going to get a lot of different results before I find what I want. It's going to be hard. I can't put in famous author quotes right bread in a word I won't say, all right? Because I'm not in England. I'm not in England right now. I can say that word when I'm in very old England. I can't say it right now. Moon Knight, let's go.
The last thing I want to say on this is right before we went live, there was the question of, could it have been an accident? Anyways, this is the Kind of Funny Screencast. Of course, you can get it every single week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Screencast. It's the show where we talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. I know. We do a lot of other things as well. It's an educational podcast. You can get this show early, if for some reason, by going to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, Molecule, Fargo Brady, Pranksy, and Anonymous have all done. Thank you all so very, very much. Today, we're brought to you by MeUndies and Maple Story. But We'll talk about that later. I want to not waste any more time before we talk about Moon Knight Episode 3, The Friendly Type, directed by Mohamed Diab, the same dude that directed Episodes 1 and then will be directing Episodes 5 and 6. Andy Cortez, I want to start with you. What did you think of this?
It was a slow episode for me. It definitely took some time for me to get going, for my interest levels to stay. I think there was a lot of exposition that isn't like incredibly well written or incredibly intriguing until I think we get towards that sort of sequence where we're having the trial. I think that's kind of where it started picking up for me. And initially I was like, ooh, this could get cheesy and not good for me pretty quickly, with Khonshu interrupting every 5 seconds in the way that he was interrupting. And luckily it didn't for me. I was kind of like worried that, all right, Oscar Isaac, I hope you could pull this off. I love everything you do. I don't know if I'll be able to love this. And I thought it was surprisingly okay. I just thought the concept of I'm going to move the stars in order to get sort of encased in stone and be locked up. We don't know what the consequences are for Mark/Steven yet, which I'm very interested to find out. But I thought all that was really fantastically done near the end.
Kevin Coelho.
I'm in a similar boat as Andy, where this episode, like, I'm ready for things to go faster. Obviously, the Council of Egyptian Gods was really cool, and it kind of like sets up things in an interesting way for other myths. Like, obviously, Thor in the MCU and the Asgard is a thing, but like, there's also a lot of talk about
Jesus,
Zeus,
close.
And all those, the Olympian gods. Sorry, I'm just thinking about vanities.
Mount Olympus, guys. Mount Olympus.
But I think by the end it did a good job catching up. The stuff they did, I think that like them switching back and forth with stuff is fun, but it's starting to lose its excitement. So now when we like don't see a fight scene because he's just switching back and forth between stuff, it's like, all right, we've already seen that gimmick, and I'm kind of like, I guess I'm ready for more story. I think Ethan, go ahead, Greg.
I was gonna ask you, Kevin, because this is something I thought interesting about the flashes and losing stuff. Did it do anything for you that it's an introduction of another personality? Like that seemed like the one upside to it. Yeah, right. Because when you remember when Mark comes back and he like Steven, or they've gotten out of another jam and like they've, you know, killed people or whatever, he's bloody. Steven's like, it wasn't me. Like they're setting up there's an even more brutal person inside.
Interesting. No, I didn't catch that.
I assumed that was Khonshu. I don't know.
Yeah, I also thought that was Khonshu. That's what, but that makes sense now because Khonshu doesn't take over. He just tells you to do stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it. And then Ethan Hawke is just fucking killer. It's one of those things that like it kind of ruined that the meaning of the gods with like Ethan Hawke just being like, I'm not doing anything bad, I'm totally fine, and then being like, all right, Ethan,
I believe him,
go on, get out of here. But like the end of the episode with Horus, maybe, I don't know, one of the gods hanging out with Ethan was like, oh, something's going on. That's more interesting. Mm-hmm. So that brought me back. But overall, I'm kind of mixed on this episode. Not one of my favorites for sure.
Nick Scarpino.
Yeah, I'm with the guys here. I'm starting to lose a little interest in this. I think now that the mystery is sort of out and we're onto the adventure part of it, I'm not as enthralled as I was when we were sort of unraveling everything. I'll say that I think my favorite part of the episode was Layla making the passport at the beginning of it. Because I was like, oh, this is a little bit, like, it's adventurous, and we're starting to learn a little bit more about her, and I just like that whole back and forth she had with the passport lady. And I also just think, I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in this, but Greg, if we had a passport guy, how cool would that be?
Dude, isn't that always that? Because I think about it all the time, just running away, leaving it all behind. But that's one of the big stumbling blocks, is how do you get a quality driver's license? How do you get a quality passport?
Honestly, for me, it's just, like, my passport's pretty perfect still, but it's always I always get that moment, Tammy. You'll remember this, of course, because I told you the story over and over again, where I went to Tokyo and I put my passport in my pocket, and it was so humid there. My passport, when I brought it back, was all shriveled up and disgusting. And at that point, I'm like, I would get my passport guy just to remake that passport for just a little cheaper than the United States passport.
I was gonna say, yeah, you can still get another passport.
Yeah. Oh no, I ended up getting another one.
I'm pretty sure that
guy's
gonna be more
expensive. You think he's gonna be more expensive?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know the prices.
I zoned out for the last 10 minutes, and I haven't missed a damn thing.
You went to a forgery. You went to a passport forgery place and just had them forge the passport you actually legally have.
That's what I want. Yeah, the exact same passport, but like maybe with an updated picture. You know how they never let you pick? It doesn't matter. I wasn't super into the action of this one, and I'm kind of opposite of Andy when it came to the Council of the Gods. I was just like, Khonshu interrupting him was comically bad, in my opinion. I just, every time he, I'm going to start talking, I'm like, oh man, that's really the direction you gave Oscar Isaac to do that. And then the voice that he used was just, I thought it was kind of cringy. But I did like the concept of the avatars, like the concept that they're out there and the door opening and all that stuff. I thought that was pretty cool. And the one friendly avatar that he encountered, I thought she did a good job too. But you know, by the end of it, I kind of came back around. The visual and just the concept of him turning back the stars was really, really cool. I think the best moment of it was Oscar Isaac. We've never seen him switch back and forth between Mark and Steven. And in this one, he just had that moment where he's talking as Mark and then kind of clicks over. And I'm like, oh, that's why we cast Oscar Isaac. He's really good. He's a good actor in this. But I'm starting to kind of wait. I'm at the point where I'm like, this could wrap up now. I'm good for this wrap up. Because I thought, honestly, the council is kind of where they lost me. Where I'm like, all these gods wouldn't just go check. Like, they wouldn't go check this guy. Like, they'll just take his word for it. Oh, we're not going to unleash this god that'll kill every single thing that we banished and, like, all of us imprisoned. They're like, five-minute interview, cool. We got better stuff to do. What are you doing? You know, it kind of – that to me kind of starting to lose – that started to lose me logically, at least, where they're like, oh, because this person's sick, we're not going to take his word for it. I'm like, well, why don't you just, you know, verify – like, follow him. What's he doing? Like, you know, I don't know.
I'm in the desert.
Yeah.
And they would be as long as the Nile. All right, we get it.
Yeah. He just happens to be, and they're like, we don't know where we hid this person, but I'm like, oh, he's probably, the god's probably around here somewhere. Maybe we keep an eye on this guy, on this Harold guy. But yeah, those are my thoughts on it.
Greg Miller.
It's interesting. You said it was back to the director of episode one, because my feelings are back to what I had on episode one, where I think it's just meh night. Like, I think. From a technical standpoint, like the rooftop fight scene that starts it or whatever, like I thought was like the room level green screen bad. Like it was like, okay, that's like clearly you're not anything back there. You're not in Egypt, whatever. I think that Ethan Hawke again continues to fucking kill it. Like I think he's like, Oscar Isaac's great. Don't get me wrong. Like he's doing great with what he has. I do like the different personalities and the switches and stuff like that. But Ethan Hawke, I think, is on just another level of like being interesting to watch and interesting to figure out the motivations. But I'm back to with Nick of the trial. I was like, even if it is like Kevin, you're saying that there's something going on with them at the end or whatever. It was just like, this seems like waste of time that it's easy to dismiss this. And like, oh yeah, he was in the Nile. No big, you just warped him in. Like, did you see him digging nonstop in the desert? Like, what are you using these powers for? What's going on for that?
Also, what if he was taking a shit when he got warped in? Like, wait, you don't know what he's doing.
He wasn't wearing the same outfit.
It's an opening. You can walk through it. Like I think you can.
Kevin, show don't tell. They didn't show us that. You know what I mean?
We know how pooping. We know how pooping works.
No, Kevin, they didn't show me. They didn't show
Moon Knight goes through it. They literally.
Yeah, but this is.
And a portal opens, and he's like,
"No, it's not good enough for me. Sorry, I can't do that. Can't do that for you."
Stargate noise.
And so, yeah, I wasn't engaged for most of the episode. It's interesting. I don't know what it is. I really enjoyed last episode. Steven with Layla, I thought they had a really good chemistry in terms of what was going on, but I don't like Mark's chemistry with Layla. And so this being more of a Mark and Layla thing, especially getting to the dude I've already forgotten with the pyramids and all the, like, it was like, okay, like you're rich and you were in Madripoor. That's cool. But like, I don't know who you are. Maybe you're from comics and I should know you, or I will know you eventually in MCU or whatever. Like,
Let me drop some facts here.
Please
do. Anton Mogart, who's a thief who only steals the finest jewels and pieces of art, and he always strikes at midnight. Because of that, he becomes known as Midnight Man. He was trying to be Moon Knight's sidekick, and that ended up not working out, so he turned into a villain. And that's kind of like his whole deal. But the sad thing is the actor died in a skiing accident like 2 months ago.
Oh my god.
So at the end of this episode, it was like a tribute to him. But no, yeah, that's bad.
Well, still, that part didn't work for me. You know, I mean, it was like, okay, whatever. Like the whole, and that was, and then you get into it, and it's back to what we talked about. Like, I made the, you know, the CG thing from the beginning, and I don't mean to harp on that. Like the green screen, I don't think looking good there. But then it's also just the CG fight scenes. I don't think look good when Moon Knight really starts going and the cape's doing his thing, and it's just like, this just doesn't look good. We've seen superheroes for so long, and I know we've seen them on the big screen. I know there's different expectations for a TV show versus that, but I think up until now, and not every time, but up until now, for the most part, Disney Plus has been really good about hiding the strings on that, because most of the shows they've done, and I might be speaking out of turn, but just think of something like WandaVision, or even like a more grounded Hawkeye, I think has been less about the fights and the superpowers and the things like that. And I know that, you know, Captain America had a whole bunch of stuff going on, but like, I don't know. I feel like this one's flying a bit too close to the sun, and it's starting to, it the seams show, and it takes me out of it. Nick.
Oh, actually, sorry. Tim, what did you think of this?
Go for it, Nick.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, that's one of the things that I think that's lacking in this, is that back and forth. Like Hawkeye, when Hawkeye started getting a little like long in the tooth, we had those nice character dynamics between Haley Steinfeld and Jeremy Renner, that I think that chemistry really kind of pushed the thing forward. I looked forward to their back and forth. Looked forward to that dynamic, because it was the the old, you know, grizzled, falling apart Avenger and the youthful up-and-comer who wants to learn from the mentor, and his reluctance to do that, I think, really was the heart of the show. Whereas in this, we're sort of expected to really appreciate where Layla and Mark are. And I'm like, on that scene on the boat, I'm like, I don't really buy that you guys are married. I don't buy that you guys know each other at all before you film the scene. Like, I agree with Greg, where I think it's more fun and more interesting to watch Steven sort of fall for her than Mark, you know, being this weird protector of, you know, of her from Khonshu. That it's that weird like 80s and 90s sitcom dramatic irony, where it's like, I'm not going to tell you, or not even sitcom, but the like 80s shows where it's like, I'm going to protect you by not telling you what's going on. And it's so insulting to other characters when you do that. And it makes me just want to not watch shows that have that bullshit in it.
And I think that's an interesting tidbit that was dropped into this one, right? Of like, hey, hasn't he told you the truth about your dad or whatever? It's like, well, what do you mean, whatever? And like, the fact that is just brushed off and not immediately double down on and revealed, I was like, oh. Like, I was hoping that would come out here. Like, I could have used that here.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they'll get to it eventually.
Sorry.
Now, Timothy Robert Geddes, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, I think it's hard because this being one of the middle episodes of the show, like, we're still kind of in this, the setting the stage for the end type situation. And because the show is so separate so far from the other MCU stuff, it's not like we're looking forward to like a reveal or like something happening that we're familiar with. So I feel like it's a little less fun to look forward to it. I've been praising the show so far for that reason, but I do think that when it comes to these adventure type movies or TV shows, like, I always start to lose interest around this part. And I don't think that this episode did a great job of changing that for me. Despite that, I think that so much of this is cool as hell. Like, I still love the designs of so many of like Khonshu, and like just the idea of the gods moving all the stars. Like, I love that stuff. And I'm usually not a big fan of adventure movies when they get to the part where, like in Uncharted even, or something recently that we've seen, where they are kind of just telling us the solution to problems and we're just supposed to believe it, as opposed to like it actually kind of lining up and making sense. And not that it doesn't make sense, it's just it only makes sense because they're creating rules for it to make sense. And it starts to, this episode reminded me of like, what if Transformers Revenge of the Fallen was pretty good actually? And like, I don't know that that's a compliment. Like, I don't think it did enough to like be a great version of that. And I said it before, but I still hear Peter Cullen, Optimus Prime's voice when Khonshu talks, and I think that that like even more reminds me of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which is not something that I want to be reminded of watching an MCU show. But I think that this show continues to do a lot of things that I really, really enjoy. And I think one of those choices is focusing on Steven for the first two episodes as opposed to Mark. And I think we're starting to see the cons of that right now, because none of us give a fuck about Mark, and we want to see more Steven, and we care about his relationship with Layla, and we don't care about Mark's. And I think that that is a choice, obviously, but I think being in the moment right now just doesn't feel good. And I agree with everybody, like this, and I said this last week, but this show just doesn't look great, and it bothers me. Like, I think that the CG stuff and the green screen and all of that, it's like, I try my best to just not worry about it and just like, what are they actually showing me? And I think when I do that, it helps a lot, but it's still just like kind of sad that that it looks the way that it does, because so much of the art style is just fantastic. It reminds me of a Nintendo game a lot, where it's like, damn, the art style is beautiful, but I just wish that it was a little higher quality. I think that Oscar Isaac continues to absolutely kill it, and seeing him be able to have more actual interaction that's not just like the what's going on type stuff, but now that he's actually in it a bit more, the bounce back and forth between Steven, Mark, Khonshu, all that, I'm totally in. There's nothing cooler than a trial of the gods. Like, multiple times this episode, I'm like, this is fucking cool. This is fucking cool. And that's awesome. And I'm excited to see that coolness pay off. And I think it's going to stick the landing. Like, I'm still very hopeful for the show. I just feel like we're kind of in a weird bit of a lull right now, but nothing cooler than having to cause a solar eclipse to call a meeting of the gods. Like, come the fuck on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love that when he did that. And then Ethan Hawke's line of like, oh, you're getting desperate, old fool, or whatever he called him. Like, I like that kind of shit. I like that Ethan Hawke is like wise to, obviously he worked for him, so he knows his tricks and what he's doing. So I love that. I love that back and forth. And I love that conversation. Ethan Hawke just talking to him and Casey Stone at the end.
Great. Right? Like, so good, Greg. Yeah. I think right there we hear a lot of different motivations from Ethan Hawke's character. We hear, but we've already gotten a decent sort of glimpse into their past and what their relationship was like. But I think that final conversation is so indicative of how abusive and how one side of the relationship was. And in a way, it makes, I mean, that's what makes a good character, when you can give a good villain, rather, when you can give the audience and show them reasons why this person is slightly justified in what they're doing, even though what they're doing is ultimately wrong. I think that's when you have the best writing for villains. And to hear Ethan Hawke be like, look, I actually liked killing for you, and I'm disgusted with that part of me. I think that's such a cool concept, and I'm really excited to see exactly what that payoff is going to be. Obviously, he's trying to resurrect Ahmet, but it's just really neat to sort of hear it spoken that loudly and that clearly for the audience, especially when you get that moment, Greg, when he talks to I already forget that character inside of that council, but he's like, and he can hear us, right? Like,
we think so.
He can hear me talking to him. All right, cool. Like, I'm gonna go fucking spit some shit at him right now. I think that's really cool.
Fuck this guy up.
Yeah. Real quick before I get to the ad read, I just want to say that I'm always a sucker for the Marvel Studios logo with different music, and I'm an extra big fan of Moon Knight continuing to have iconic hip-hop samples that sample like Middle Eastern songs, but then taking the samples and just playing them, but like it's like a remix of the sample. It's so dope. Damn cool. And we get that in the credits as well for this one. I'm just like, yo, they got some shit going. And the Moon Knight theme is really growing on me, and I love getting the full on Middle Eastern like choir version in this one. I thought that was like super dope, and I'm excited to see more of it. And the tease of the third personality, I think they're doing really well, and I'm excited. Like, it recontextualized it, Greg, bringing up the blood stuff. Like, it's cool to think like of the different times where they've really focused on when there is blood or when there's not blood in episodes 1 and 2. And I'm excited to see like what rules are they going to give us. So rewatching it, it's like, oh, that was a personality we didn't know about yet or whatever. So that's really cool. But before we keep talking, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to Maple Story for sponsoring this episode. After 17 years of rich MMO gameplay wrapped in a unique 2D side-scroller, Maple Story is ready to proudly lean into its cute, pixelated aesthetic. The aggressively cute campaign aims to showcase the unexpected juxtaposition of cuddly, smiley characters with rich, multi-layered MMO gameplay. The campaign focuses on telling a story of immense character customization, a vast array of weapons and mounts to choose from, a seemingly endless horizon of lands to explore and battle, all while dealing huge amounts of damage to monsters of all shapes and sizes. I know a lot of people out there love Maple Story, so hey, come check out this armed and adorable campaign. This is your world. With over 40 classes and thousands of cosmetic customization options, you can play how you want, and there's just so much good stuff. 18 years of content, no signs of slowing, means you'll never get bored. You can go to maplestory.nexon.net. That's maplestory.nexon.net for more, or you can just click the link in the description. This episode is brought to you by me MeUndies. I love MeUndies. You guys have heard me talk about MeUndies for years at this point. I'm always wearing the MeUndies shirt, the MeUndies lounge pants, the MeUndies undies, the MeUndies socks. I can go on and on and on. If MeUndies putting out a product, chances are Tim Gettys is wearing them. The MeUndies membership is literally designed to make your life easier with free shipping and returns on every order, savings on virtually everything they make, exclusive sales, and early access to their newest stuff. There's kind of no reason not to join. Get super soft undies, bralettes, or socks shipped directly to your door and live a more comfortable life knowing you always have what you need at your fingertips when you step out of the shower. MeUndies has a great offer for all of you. Any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off. For a limited time, if you sign up for their free-to-join MeUndies membership, you can get 25% off your first membership item. To get 25% off your first membership item or 15% off your first order and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindafunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindafunny.
Tim, I'm glad you've welcomed us back to the show, because what I'd like to do is that we're all high on Ethan Hawke right now, right? And Nick, I think I have your vote for this, all right? I'd like to propose that we do an in-review of the Before trilogy.
Oh, how's everybody feel with that? That'd be fun.
Is everybody familiar with this?
Yeah, no. Before Sunset. Before
you know, Sunset. That trilogy. Richard Linklater, right? You know, of course, yeah, the storied director of in making films and stuff, right? Did Dazed and Confused. And I've only heard, I know about these. I've never watched any of them.
Really?
But yeah, there's the Before Sunrise in 95, Before Sunset in 2004, and Before Midnight in 2013. And Nick, you might sound like you already know more about it than it. It's basically Ethan Hawke and some the co-star is Julia Delpy, right?
Delpy,
who. It's like basically chronicling their relationship, but it's like dropping in, obviously, in 95, 2004, 2013.
Yeah, he did the same thing he did with
that kid.
Yes, right. But yeah, basically, like it's the first movie was God, I saw it back in the day, and then I didn't even remember it. And then when the newer one came out, I think I watched all three of them. But yeah, it's really just about their relationship. They meet when they're traveling, and they kind of fall for each other, and then they just. That's it. It's just capturing that one.
Don't tell
moment.
Me anything else. Yeah, don't tell me anything else because I want to see how it evolves.
I mean, it's really just all about that. It's really about just touching with these characters, checking with these characters, and like
Tim, we love Ethan Hawke. Let's do this.
I'll tell you what. Can we? I love that, but we also have to randomly throw Gattaca into it because I just watched that movie the other night and it's awesome.
We'll do that one last as if it
was
Gwyneth
Paltrow in it. Is
that
right?
That was their kid.
No, it's got Uma Thurman in it. Gattaca. That's the one where
it's like Uma Thurman.
Yeah,
remember that song? Great song.
No,
really?
That's cool.
Fall Out Boy, right, Andy? It's got the Munster sample in it.
I don't think so. I'll tell you one thing I don't like about this show. I don't like Mr. Knight's head piece. It looks so
cool.
It's brave of you to come forth.
It looks so cosplayish in real life. I think it looks cool in images and promotional stuff that they've been using. But in real life, it really does give that vibe of like when you know that Spider-Man actors aren't just wearing the mask. They have a sort of thing going over their face to kind of form fit. Like here's the eyebrows, the strong eyebrows. And it kind of like forms a skull structure that the fabric is then put over. But I feel like it's that accentuated times 20.
Well, it's because it has that structure in the mouth that they would usually do something with
the power
in a movie, right?
Yeah.
Well, like so, I think one of the things they did, obviously, that I think really, really helped sell Spider-Man is the animation in the eyes and things like that, like really give it that articulation. And in this, it does feel like there's just a piece, like you know, piece of foam that he's looking through. And that's what I said when we watched the trailer originally. One of the things I didn't like, I don't like the lighted up eyes. I want them to move like you would see those eyes move in like a Batman the Animated Series where he's actually, you know, you can see him emoting through his eyes and moving them. But in this one, it's just so static the entire time. But I do like, I prefer that look to the actual Moon Knight look still. I think that's a cooler, more contemporary look. And I think they should, I mean, I just like that's, you can just tell that's Steven's personality coming through.
It looks like there's white fabric over a Deathstroke or a Red Hood helmet. Yeah. That's what it kind of looks
not,
like.
But not a Deathstroke from like the DCEU, from like Deathstroke from like the CW, or it's like, wow, that's just.
First off, I helped you get there, but I want you to fuck off. Deathstroke on Arrow was awesome.
Well, but you know what I'm talking about with the masks, right? Where it's like, ah, those things look so uncomfortable.
I thought his
masks
look good in Arrow. I mean, like later in the seasons, that's when you get into weirder stuff. I think
it's one of those things where you look at it, well, not in Moon Knight, but when it comes to the CW shows, you're like, how could that be practical? You can't see through that fucking thing. That's you can't breathe through any of these masks. But yeah, I'm with you on Andy.
Both versions of Moon Knight are at Disneyland now, and it's super dope. Like they have Moon Knight like up on the Avengers Campus thing, like he's more just like part of the show. But then they have Mr. Knight like walking around in it. It's like he's acting like Steven. And if you ask him questions and stuff, he's all bumbling and shit. It's like, he looks dope as hell with the white light eyes, which is sick as hell.
I want to, I also wanted to point out that the, I'm kind of with Nick, except like, I love the design of Moon Knight and the costume. I think it's like sick as hell. It reminds me a lot though of watching a lot of different Batman characters fight where you are so constricted because the hood has to kind of stay in place. And in animation, you know that shit would be flowing a lot and it would be like really kind of cool and fluid looking. But there's still a lot of like when I want to turn, I have to get my whole upper body to turn as opposed to just my neck because the hood won't move with it. Like it's I think it's something that works in theory a lot better than when it's seen on camera.
I'm kind of coming at it from a different perspective where I feel like it's like over animated. Like I kind of expect him to move more like Batman, but it seems like he moves more like Spider-Man and it feels off to me. And I don't know if that's just a CG thing or whatever, but it's like, I wonder how much of the fight scenes are actually, if there even is a guy in a suit ever in the proper Moon Knight suit, because I feel like more often than not, he's just zip zapping around and it's like, it just doesn't look
right. And that's again, one of the things that throws me, like I could be wrong. But it looked like in the fight scene on the ground at the pyramid guy's house, when one of the dudes like grabbed him from behind, it definitely seemed like it was a dude just grabbing nothing and they animated Moon Knight in and then he did whatever he fucking did. And I just don't like that.
I wish the power set and the move set was more similar to Hela, where she, like her whole visual vibe is I'm conjuring these black blades and swords and shit. And I wish Moon Knight had something more along the lines of that, where we don't really ever see him. We've seen him grab for the crescent moon weapon a couple times, like in real life. But during that fight, it just felt like they were kind of coming out of nowhere. I kind of wish that they were like, you know, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is, but they would just like appear into frame. Yeah, materialize sort of in his hand as he's throwing these things. I think that would be a lot cooler and that would go it would make this sort of visual language of what Moon Knight's fighting style is a bit more unique and more entertaining to watch, but as of right now I'm just like, he's grabbing them from his chest, we've seen him do that, but I don't think that that's cool enough for what for how mystical and cool this character actually is.
I loved having Layla with the necklace, and the moment you see it, like, oh, she's gonna fuck someone else with those, and then she did. And I was like, this is sick. This is really sick. And I also
happened to be a guy who like welcomed her in a very nice way at the beginning. He was like, hey, Layla, what's going on? I haven't seen you in a while. Just fucked him up.
All that magic's over.
But I appreciate the show. Everyone's been talking about how it's a little bit darker than some of the recent MCU shows we've gotten, and like that suicide was like something I didn't expect to see. And so I was like, oh shit, okay. But then
and I appreciate that he got it wrong, right? The god got it wrong, where it's just like, I thought he would have talked.
And it was there was one shot in this that I was like, this is really weird, where he like licks the knife and gets punched.
That was some overacting on those guys that I didn't like.
They were very much all
and
like dragging the knives on the ground. I was like, all right.
Overhead shot after the dude says you know, praise Amit or whatever, and then he cuts the thing and ends up killing himself. That overhead shot was like atrocious CG. That was some of the worst stuff I think the show has offered so far. Even though I say that in like the fight scene that preceded that on the rooftops with the really bad The Room CG, like Greg was mentioning earlier, because that overhead shot was like, I feel like 99% CG. They can't get it right now. And I don't know if it's like the lighting or the locations that they're choosing. It just looks really bad.
It's wild because you think it would be a problem money could solve, you know? And they have lots of money, you know?
Do they have a finite amount? Like, you don't have like a blank checkbook, right? You got to allocate that somewhere, Kevin.
Kevin, what do you think this is, like a Disney's fucking Moon Knight sort of thing, like they're fucking Pixar?
No, it's obviously not that intense.
I do like getting a couple more references to the MCU at whole with Madripoor being referenced. When we first saw City, I was like, oh shit, like it's Madripoor. And it was like, not at all. It was like Egypt. But then later when they referenced it, I was like, okay, cool. This is kind of, I like that it's connecting. But I am really interested now in next week. And I wonder if they'll even get into it in the rest of the show. But like the whole dope ass looking solar eclipse, like moving all the stars and all that stuff, was that an illusion? Was that real? Does that, what effects does that actually have? Because when you start to think about the ramifications in the MCU, like that world has had some shit go down in like a year time period, where fresh off the Eternals, right, where there's now like this giant celestial in the earth, like partly coming out, and then all the purple shit from No Way Home and like just everything that's been going on. It's like shit is ratcheted up, man.
The earth is like, give me a break, man. Jesus.
It's definitely, yeah, it's like all the stuff that you I think we all forget as comic book readers, you know, you just don't think about that much in terms of like the back to back, week to week, month to month, these four people are looking at it. But yeah, in a universe that has been so grounded and dealt with it, like with support groups for Endgame and all that kind of shit, like to get here now and have all this crazy shit happening all the time, like people must be going out of goddamn minds.
I'm interested in the ramifications of this in particular, because I get the vibe that it's not just going to be glossed over. Like I feel like there has to be some level of like what just happened there and how is it going to affect.
I bet it's glossed over.
I think it's glossed over.
Maybe you'll get one throwaway comment from a NPC or whatever next week about the fact that like, yeah, whatever, we got like, stars moved all weird last night or two nights ago.
Well, because they referenced that he's not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah,
which kind of gives me the vibe he's gonna do it again. But yeah, but maybe I'm wrong.
The reference was just because they don't, like, for whatever reason, they want to stay hidden. And when
I thought that was referencing the fact that he did the eclipse, and then like, all right, cool, you already know that they hate that, I've already pushed it, and now I'm gonna move the stars, so I'm getting encased. But
right. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't,
but even the eclipse, right, everybody's like, all right, Ethan Hawke's like, keep digging, don't worry, this is some bullshit.
Don't worry about all that.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know, I really just thought that it was a way to get caught again. I don't think he's gonna do it again, but I don't know if there is any fallout from it. I agree with Greg, I think somebody might mention it. Or we might in the future hear about it in a movie when they go, oh, you were the reason the whole stars did blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think it's going to have any long lasting effects, even though, Kevin, if you destroy the moon, what does that mean for Earth?
Yeah. Trust me. It means all the manatees can't find their way back to the boat.
They'll figure it out eventually.
Any final thoughts on this episode, boys?
I feel like I've just been liking the show less and less, and that bums me out. Because I think it's one of the strongest starts to end the MCU show. And having that ending was just so exciting. And I think the mystery of it all had me more intrigued. And now that we're kind of getting into the nitty gritty of it, it has lost me a little bit. And that kind of bums me out. But hopefully they pick it up. And I say that because I think we have several friends who have watched through most of the show, except for the final episode, like they always do.
No, they've only seen one more.
They've only seen one more.
And then the fifth episode accidentally got sent to like four people in the world. That's it.
Got it. Okay. I just feel like with people that I know that are pretty high on this show, so I'm hoping that it does turn around for me pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm hopeful, and I think it's going to stick the landing. I think this is probably going to end up being one of the stronger shows, but I highly doubt it's going to end up being one of my favorite shows. And that kind of bums me out, but hey, hopefully they turn that around.
Yeah, I'm in the point where I don't look forward to it. Like, I'm not like dreading it, don't get me wrong. Oh, woe is me, I gotta watch a fucking cartoon or a comic book show. Like, I like that, obviously, but I don't sit down and hit play and be like, oh yeah, let's go. What's Mark and Steven getting into today? It's like, all right, let's see where they're gonna do.
Yeah.
Ethan Hawke, let's just do the before trilogy and review.
Yeah.
Cameron Kennedy knows what I'm talking about.
I hate to keep bringing it back, but like I want these shows so badly to hit on the Peacemaker mark for me, where I just look forward to seeing what's happening in that weird wild world. And they're kind of following the same flow for me every single time we go, where I'm like, I'm interested. And then as the episodes go on, by the time we get to episode 3 and 4, I'm like, all right, let's just see how this one wraps up. And again, they're not bad shows. I just wish they were slightly more. I wish they could hit that like HBO Max mark, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I'm in the same boat as everyone, where it's like, I'm very much in the same boat as Nick, where it's like, Yeah, I really wish these were better. And it's like people have been talking about a comic book hero like fatigue, you know. If they keep making stuff that's like this, or it's very like, it's fine. I could watch this, or if it's starting to feel like I could miss this. And they really need to move away from that because, keep me wanting more.
Well, it's going to also dilute like the all the characters, right? The more we get stuff that's like just okay, the more it's everything gets diluted, and you just start thinking that maybe we don't, you know, it's not as special as it once was.
My biggest fear, and I feel like this is starting to drift towards that, is proving Jared Petty right. Where Jared Petty is on every time they announce a new MCU show, I'm just a big old grump. I want to smoke cigars and play physical games. And he's like, and I'm like, well, I enjoy this. He's like, isn't there a saturation point? And I'm like, fuck off, Jared Petty. And if it turns out that Moon Knight's the one, I'm like, all right, I don't really didn't need to watch this. Didn't want to watch this.
Yeah.
I hate Jared Petty being right, but luckily nobody has sound. Right. That'd be cool.
He's
be cool.
On the internet. He'll never know. He'll never see this.
Well, let us know in the comments below what you think. And until next time, love you all. Goodbye.